You are listening to Discovering Virginia on the Virginia Voice, and for the Virginia Voice, I'm Lou Dean. Several programs in this series have explored Chesterfield County. What you may not know is that the Chesterfield Historical Society has an exhibit that tells the story of segregated schools in the county. In the next few minutes, you'll hear about that exhibit. The Reverend Herbert C. Towns is the interim chairman of the African American History Committee for the Chesterfield Historical Society. Mr. Towns, what's the function of the African American History Committee in Chesterfield?
Let me say at the outset, I'm very honored to be here to be interviewed on behalf of the Chesterfield Historical Society of Virginia, and in particular the African American History Committee. And as we start this interview, I want to share that I want to first give honor to those who have gone before me as I sit here to be interviewed by you. I really feel that it's a great honor because those who have sacrificed so much for us to be where we are today, I feel like I'm unable to even latch their shoes, as I said before you. So I'm one of many who have benefited from the struggles of our people down through the years. The African American History Committee, to answer your question, is one of the committees of the Chesterfield Historical Society of Virginia, obviously a nonprofit organization that has many committees. It's all volunteer, 501c3 organization. Our committee is one of the many, as I said. Our object is to collect and preserve an expansive archive of the rich history of African Americans in Chesterfield County. From the time that we started back in 1999, we knew that there was a need for us to tell our own story. We wanted to tell our story from our perspective, to bring it to modern times. Our story had been told in the past, and it had been told as a happy history. You may recognize that term because it's been in the news recently with what's happening in Jefferson County, Colorado, with the school board which wanted to tell a happy history. They wanted to only talk about the good things and paint a rosy picture of history, and that was the case, we felt, in Chesterfield. So we endeavored to tell our own story from our perspective.
There was, of course, an attempt to give a happy history of slavery.
Exactly. And even in Chesterfield, there was an effort to paint us in that picture, that we were content in our existence, in our subservience even, that we were content to be where we were. And that certainly was not the case, as if we had no ambitions and no drive to do better and to be better than we were at that time. So it's very important that we tell our history. And even significantly, I at a conference I attended last Friday in Williamsburg for Virginia Africana, a group with the Virginia Foundation for the Humanity, Dr. McGee spoke there, and he spoke about our history and telling our history, and he made a very profound statement. He said that memories fade because images keep shrinking. As long as we don't keep the images alive, our memories, our history even, will fade. So if no one tells our story, or if you don't tell the complete story, or you tell an untrue story, the true memories will fade, and we will not be able to know our true history. From the time we started in 1999, we have done projects down through the years. One of our first major projects was we did the history of all the African-American churches in Chesterfield County over 100 years old. We documented that history. You know, we got records, and we made sure we had that information archived because the church, African-American churches, has been central to all that we do as a people all across the country. So we wanted that history to be told. The next endeavor we undertook, project, was what we call Four Score and More. This was the real telling of our story. We tried to interview, and we fairly successful at interviewing every African-American in our county over 80 years old. We wanted that we have their narratives, we have their stories, we have some videos, we have audios, we have pictures. So we wanted to make sure that our story was told from a primary source perspective. So we have that history. In the process of interviewing people for this Four Score More, there was a common theme that we kept hearing that resounded and really spoke to our spirit, because they spoke of being educated. They spoke of the sacrifices and struggle that they endured to get an education. So we kept hearing this. So it was a spiritual occurrence for all of us to kind of come on one accord and understand we have to tell the story of our education in Chesterfield County. And this was during a time of segregation, a time of Jim Crow, a time of separate but unequal, that supposedly went to separate but equal, but was not equal. So we still had to have the Civil Rights Bill of 1964. So we wanted to tell that story. That's how the African American schools in Chesterfield County during the segregated era exhibit came about. Now, the exhibit was displayed starting last February of 2014. It was at the Chesterfield County Museum. It was scheduled to run as for African History for Black History Month. Scheduled to run for 1 month. Supposed to come down at the end of February. The response was tremendous. Initially, it was extended through May of this year. The response was really overwhelming and wound up being extended from February through July of this year. So that's kind of the inception of the exhibit. The exhibit comprised posters and pictures of schools. The primary and central to that is a segregated school map that we used to introduce people to the segregated schools. We have a map of Chesterfield County, a present-day map. Interposed on that map are all of the schools, African-American schools, up until the last high school that was built for African-Americans, Carver High School, in 1948. So in every community in Chesterfield, there was an African-American school. So we have all of those schools from east part geographical area of Chesterfield County depicted on this map by dots, by name. And then we have Carver High School, which was the last school built. The impact of this map is when you look at the map and you see where Carver High School is centrally, not centrally, they call it central, but it's not. It's more in the southeastern part of Chesterfield County. What this map does is give people who can see it an image of what segregated schools was like. From the far reaches, no matter how where you lived in Chesterfield County, from an African American from 1948 to around 1969, you were bused to Carver High School, the only high school in Chesterfield County for African Americans. Now, given there were other high schools, two other high schools prior to that in Chesterfield, Hickory Hill High School and D. Webster Davis High School. Hickory Hill High School is in now was in the annex area of Richmond on Belt Boulevard, and D. Webster Davis High School down near Virginia State in Ettrick. If you were able to get to those schools, you were able to get an education. But the county did not provide you transportation. And those schools only went into the 11th grade during the time up until 1948. So when they decided to build Carver, they closed those two schools, Hickory Hill and D. Webster Davis. They combined the school colors. Carver schools are burgundy and white. So they opened Carver. So if you lived in Winter Park, the far west part of the county, if you live in northwestern Chesterfield, where I lived, you were bused to Carver. If you lived down there at Petersburg, you were bused to Carver. If you lived in the Forest Hill area, which is now Richmond, you were bused to Carver High School.
Every single black student?
Every single black student. I rode the bus for about an hour and 15 minutes at least to get to school, one way. Others rode as much as almost 2 hours, one way to get to school. That was the condition of the education that we endured under segregation up until 1960. Our schools were integrated in 1963. Even though the Voters' Rights Act was passed in 54, you know, we all know about the massive resistance that took place in various parts of the country and even the state. In addition to the massive resistance, there was passive resistance to integrating the schools. So all kinds of things happened to try to prevent us from getting an equal education, to have the same conditions that the white children had, to not continue to be educated in inferior conditions with inferior resources.
Now, you mentioned specifically a high school. What about the elementary and middle schools?
The elementary and middle schools were also segregated. They were segregated also. I went to all black Midlothian Elementary School at the time, which is now Lifelong Learning Institute in Midlothian. And all of us went to segregated elementary schools also. They were, and you have to understand that even though I'm mentioning schools, it's not like the schools were up to standard of the white schools. They were not. You know, even in Carver when it was built, it was not up to the standards of the existing white schools. So that was a condition. All of the schools were segregated.
I want to ask, to whom and for whom is this exhibit aimed? Is it aimed specifically to the blacks who want to keep that history alive? Is it aimed to the whites who would prefer perhaps to forget it?
We set out to tell our story, and we believe telling our story will lead us where it should go. Obviously, we wanted our own people to know our history. So we make all the work we do, we make available to anyone who would have us to come in and share what we have, from the church history to Fourscore and More to the segregated schools exhibit. I believe we would all say that we, again, to repeat, we wanted to make sure we know our own history as we tell it. So that was the intent. So, this particular exhibit, we comment, when I say we, I'm speaking of the committee in general. We were kind of, I don't know what the word is, not amazed, but kind of like astonished in some respects at the response to this exhibit. What is it about this exhibit that struck a chord in people to make the attendance and the interest in it so great that people wanted to keep coming and see it?
So what has been the response? I'm curious.
The response has been tremendous.
Comments. What have some of the comments been?
The people who saw the exhibit, information as they signed out, you know, wonderful. You know, this should continue. I'm glad you're telling the story. I don't have all of them, but it was those all positive comments because, you know, in this process of telling our story, the committee itself, we encountered people as we would go places in the public making copies who don't know of this history. The response has been such that we have been very fortunate to be able to make inroads into getting this information into the Chesterfield County school system. And that is powerful that we're able to get in the school system. I mean, considering the standards of learning and the strict things they have, that even someone to have an interest to invite us to come in and tell our story so that we can see how this fits and with the civil rights movement and what part this plays. We can be primary sources to share our stories. So that's been the response. We have been invited to make presentations based on this exhibit. We are doing one at the Lifelong Learning Institute in Midlothian next month. Some of our committee members are working on that project now. We'll be speaking at various places where we have been invited to go and tell this story across black and white. I mean, it's just been amazing. The response we've had.
You're hearing from the Reverend Herbert C. Towns, who's the interim chairman of the African American History Committee for the Chesterfield Historical Society. But Mr. Towns, I would like you to continue a bit. You gave a map of the schools, of where they were located, but give us an audio tour of the exhibit.
The exhibit, as you went in, we would have, again, this map that I described would be prominently displayed, and out of looking at this map and getting an image of that map, what it looked like, conversations would evolve about these schools, where they were located, the names. So we have pictures of these schools, as many as we could find. We also had pictures of students during that time, in school or outside, as early as the early 1900s, children who were one generation out of slavery at school, pictured in front of their schoolhouses. We had pictures of some educators who we also recognized the sacrifices that they made, the ones who not only educated us, but all of the support staff, the custodians, and all those who cleaned the schools and prepared the schools for us. So when you walked in and you saw a map, then you would see schools, and you would walk around and see pictures of all the schools that were in existence at that time. We had some artifacts from those days, from yearbooks, from Carver High School, some school books, some old school report cards. We had African American student report cards from the 1930s. Those types of things. We had some school books. We had historical information that was taken from school board records, trying to show how decisions were made far as relative to funding our schools. That's very important to us. to know how and why these decisions were made by those in authority. What type of decisions were made? We have information on the salaries of school teachers who back then who made one half of what the white teachers did. Up until they decided that equal pay was justified. So that was the condition back then. We have those type of documents in addition to the pictures that in our exhibit. Now, mind you, you say we have the exhibit, it's in a box. You know, it's not, there's another exhibit I mentioned the Chesterfield Historical Society, and at the museum they have revolving exhibits. Now, running through probably the first of the year, there's an exhibit at the museum on genealogy. So anyone who's interested in genealogy can go there and get information. So our exhibit is not up right now. There's a good possibility we will have it at the Chesterfield Historical Society, which is Holy Trinity Church in Chesterfield. We probably will be posting the exhibit there for the public to see, to view, even though it's taken down now.
For our listeners who are very interested in this, it would be interesting to see a contrast between a segregated school and an integrated school, or a white school, an all-white school at the time.
It is, and we have asked those same questions, and we have not pursued it as much as we have our own story. But as we may have had talked earlier, we also interested in hearing the other side of the story. We can tell our story from being the underprivileged, but there was a privilege who had a school that had resources. So we want to know what it was like for you to attend that school. How did you view those who were not attending school with you? How did you view us who didn't look like you, but had to go to a separate school? We have not undertaken as a project to get that. It may be something that's on down the road. We may lead into doing something like that. But I can say on a personal note, in my interaction with people, I do try to draw out of them their stories, especially those of my own generation. What did you feel? And we also encourage young people when we talk to them, we'll be talking to them in the schools. We want you to interview your grandparents and your parents and ask them what it was like for them. And ask them if they were in a decision-making position, why did you make such a decision? We need to ask those questions. And we encourage children to ask their parents and their grandparents, who they have the fortune enough to still be with them while they have an opportunity to do so.
I'm sure that as you take this exhibit around and people see it, they share their stories.
Oh, sure. When we had an opportunity to introduce our exhibit to Chesterfield County at what was called a lunch and learn, we were thrilled to be invited to speak to teachers, to explain to them what we had and to let them know we're available as a resource. And as I mentioned earlier, two comments came out of that. You know, as you said, their story. One teacher in particular explained that her grandfather told the story that he used to drive the school bus for the white kids. But the white kids, for some reason, would throw their school books out of the bus because they didn't want to go to school. So she said her grandfather told her that if you keep throwing these school books out of the bus, I'm going to take you over where the colored kids are and let you throw them out there. Now, I mean, I didn't press on it, but to ponder that statement, I don't know what context he was speaking in. Obviously, the first thing comes to mind is that, well, we're going to, you know, they didn't look favorably on the colored kids. So we don't want anything good for them. So we don't want you to throw these good books out for the colored kids. That's one context. And further, I don't know the context he was speaking this to his grandchild. Was he regretting having done that? Or was he still perpetuating a mentality? So, and there was another comment that we heard. When you talk about this eliciting a response from people when we present it, another person said they had recently had a bus driver from Chesterfield County who retired, an African-American bus driver who spoke about driving us to school. He said he drove buses, and I'm a witness to this, he drove buses that had no heat. So he would get up in the morning and warm up bricks to put in the bus so that we would have some warmth going to school. See, now there's one story that the bus driver told, and the school teacher is now telling this same story. And this story only comes out because we were there and telling our story, so that elicited such a response.
Several times, Mr. Towns, you've mentioned the presentation. You mentioned that you give presentations, and then you've referred to them. How do the presentations augment, add to the exhibit itself?
I believe this is not a final product. Just like we evolved to get to this segregated school piece, we are still learning more, and even as we interact with other people and we tell the story. I hope that kind of answers your question. I mean, I don't, you know, it can be a traveling exhibit. When we invite it, we pull pieces depending on the audience.
You're not only showing the exhibit, you're speaking about it.
We're telling the story.
Yes.
We're telling a story so that the images don't fade and the memory will live on. If we don't tell the story, you know, giving a picture is one thing, but that picture just allows you to tell a story based on that picture.
Are you saying that the exhibit does not stand on its own, that you really have to explain it as you go along?
Some explanation is needed. I mean, when we had it at the museum, there was enough information that you did not need a docent to escort you around the museum. There was enough narrative there for you to read and understand what was depicted on a poster or on a picture. You know, there was enough there. So we have not as of yet placed this exhibit in a place where we were not. We have not put this in a place where we were not there to, someone was there to either have to watch over it, but we may be doing that. And when we put it in where the Chesterfield Historical Society is, there'll be no one there. It'll just be the pictures on the wall, you know, for those to come and see.
Several times you've mentioned now that people have given you their personal stories. So it seems that this is an ongoing project, that you have a lot of work to do in the near future as you gather stories.
As I said, the stories keep coming.
Right.
The stories keep coming. Even as you open up, getting the other side of stories is something that's there that we have not really sunk our teeth into as a project. You know, I was thinking, you know, I have some ideas. I was even thinking this morning about how we may be able to do that, some maybe panel discussions and have some opportunities to talk further. But the amazing and awesome thing about this is just the response of it. You know, what is it about this that strikes a chord at this particular time? Is it because this is the, you know, 60th anniversary of the Civil Rights Bill? Is it 50 years of the Civil Rights Bill? You know, 60 years of Brown versus Board of Education? What is it about this exhibit that strikes a chord? We can only see good coming from it. As we can have this conversation, sit across one another and have a conversation about things that are uncomfortable to some. I'm not uncomfortable about it. Why? I'm not uncomfortable at all talking about my story.
What do you hope is the ongoing impact of this?
That people have a conversation. That people will have a conversation, and to bring it to modern times, we hear in the media having a conversation about race, and really a conversation about race is not being had. When I mention happy history in this country, our history in this country, has been that we came over here as slaves. Abraham Lincoln freed the slaves. Martin Luther King came along, we had civil rights, and that was it. Until we elected an African-American president. That's been our happy history. No one wants to talk about what happened during Reconstruction. You know, what happened after Civil War when we were getting into politics as a people, and how Jim Crow came along and destroyed that. And out of Jim Crow came the segregated era and all of the atrocities that were committed during those times. I'm listening to a man calling on a talk show, said his father came home from World War II as an African-American man, came home from World War II, and in the South he got lynched. So we have that history. It makes people uncomfortable. But let's not blot that history out. It's part of our country. Why, you know, let's have that conversation so we really can have a you know, to speak biblically, to be made whole.
I'll ask you a dirty question. In the context of all of this, are things better off today, in this year?
Obviously, we as a country have made great inroads. We as a people have made great inroads. The election of an African-American president notwithstanding, we have made inroads and economically in all facets of life. Looking at us, sure, it's kind of, you know, on surface we have made, we are better off. In many ways, we are not better off. I often speak of the sense of community we had when we were growing up and even struggling. We had a sense of community where people, all people, not only us as a people of color, we accounted and were accountable to one another for our actions. There are many ways in which we are not better off. I describe it this way. We struggled to survive poverty. We had to go through some things to lift ourselves up. And now out of that poverty, we have some measure of prosperity. And now the struggle to survive this prosperity will entail us adopting some of the same strategies we did to survive poverty. We survived poverty by having a sense of community, a loving and caring for one another. But now prosperity can cause not only us, I'm not speaking of us, but any people, to be separated. You know, the things that are going on in this world. We have our own little worlds today, and we are not as much as community as we once were.
The Reverend Herbert C. Towns has been talking about an exhibit in Chesterfield County. Does this exhibit yet have a permanent home, or is it a traveling exhibit?
It does not, as of this day, have a permanent home. We can call it a traveling exhibit, even though by the letter of the definition it's not so. When we are asked to come and present, we can put the pieces together to, you know, to present to an audience. And we do that to suit our audience, depending on who the audience is.
Do you search out the audience, or do you wait for the audience to search out you?
We've been very fortunate. People have been coming to us and searching us out, and we have we are very pleased with the amount of interest that has been shown in our exhibit. We're very pleased with the interest in us coming and presenting at various places. So when we do want to seek out and make ourselves available, we do make ourselves available, particularly to our churches. Who, as we said at the very early on, who are so important to us as a people, to churches and other organizations who would have us to come and speak on this.
The Reverend Herbert C. Towns is the interim chairman of the African American History Committee for the Chesterfield Historical Society. You're listening to Discovering Virginia on the Virginia Voice. And for the Virginia Voice, I'm Lou Dean.